Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today I am joined by Dr. Bear Lando. Before we dive in, I am reminding you to click that subscribe button to like, to share, to comment, to tell your friends to tune into the Word Up podcast. I'm also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. It's the very best way to ensure that we stay in touch, regardless of whatever big tech censorship shenanigans may or may not be happening out there in the cold, cruel apocalypse world that we are swiftly transmuting back to the frequency of freedom. That does it. Buckle up and prepare to enjoy my conversation with Dr. Bear Lando. Dr. Bear Lando, thank you for being here. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing awesome. Thanks for having me. Fun to be here. And love your shirt.
Thank you. I wore it in honor of you. I know you are King Hawaiian shirt man, so I wanted to match energy at least in my clothing realm.
It's about having color, you know, and in these days everything's kind of muted gray, black, you know, and white and let's, you know, when you live in tropical locations, everything's brightly colored and painted, and I like that.
I like it too, and I feel like the world's gone crazy and drab and weird enough. And I always refer back to the Einstein quote, which I'm completely paraphrasing and mangling, where he says, like, when you realize basically that like space-time makes no sense, it's not an issue to wear polka dots and plaid at the same time. So it's just, I
Right.
mean, I dress silly just kind of like to mix it up out in the world. Spread some joy and laughter, why not?
Exactly.
So, I'm curious to know when you woke up to the Western medical sham. I know you're a doctor. You went through the kind of like traditional Western medical education paradigm, if I understand it correctly. I did see, I think it was on your LinkedIn that you went to Stanford in addition to other schools. And I'm wondering if at that time you were still, giving your allegiance and your trust to the Western medical paradigm, or if you already knew at that point that you were going to go a different way.
I knew on day one when I was a kid I was going a different way. And the reason why I got into conventional studies is, you know, I was a jock and through high school scholarship athlete. And I always took my training scientifically, and I wanted to understand everything I could about how the body ticks, what makes it work to, you know, up my game, get the most out of it. Because I've always thought I'd just play pro ball and, you know, that would be my life. But I really liked the kind of the engineering part of it, so I spent a lot of time in the university libraries and things. And then it kind of dawned on me one day, hey, why don't I just do medical training? And that's how I got into that. And it's good because I learned the vocabulary of anatomy, physiology, biochemistry, biophysics, you know, all that good stuff, so that you know, I could interface in that world. And it's a language, you know, so I was able to interpret what I think I always knew through that language. And then, you know, when I was first in the business, I was in emergency medical services. And, you know, what's wrong with that? Somebody's bleeding, stop the bleeding. If their heart stops, you know how to stop. So it was really good MASH training. I did that for about 5 years. But it wasn't where I was at in my personal life at all. So it just seemed like a natural sequelae to move on to naturopathic college, which I did. Then I did chiropractic college, and I've spent my whole life going all over the world. You know, back in my formative years, there were still a lot of iconic individuals that pioneered things within bioterrain medicine and things that don't exist anymore. Old osteopathic schools and you know, not traditional Chinese medicine, but some folks from the old country that I knew through my martial arts circles that actually took me under the wing so I could do apprenticeships rather than just do TCM, you know, what people call. So, I just wanted to know it all. But, from the start, I was grew up in a different culture. Mom's family's from Peru, dad, family from Italy. They always grew their own stuff. I spent my whole life just wandering around in the woods, in the hills, and it was kind of a shift going into that epic academic linear left brain kind of mode to get through school. But again, it's a way you learn the vocabulary of the world. So then what you're getting from direct intelligence through resonance, and you can interpret in the words that people in the outer world think is reality.
And when you were going through your studies, I went to journalism school, so I saw the propaganda and the indoctrination coming through that realm. When you were going through it, were you aware of programming that went against people's best interests? Was it not really that strong back then? What was
No, I it was very very pronounced from my perspective. And again, I think because of a sports background, my whole leaning was to take your body out for a spin and see how the thing actually works, and then do different things. Kind of scientific experimentation, empiricism, where you do things and you go, okay, that worked, that didn't, so forth. The main thing I was able to connect the dots with after a while of more advanced training later on in years, especially when I transcended from football to martial arts, is that it's all a matter of the mind, because I would sit down and do my little anal preparations in the off season for what my training program was supposed to be. And as soon as I got down on paper, my body started changing. And I'm like, wait, that doesn't make sense. I didn't even make it out to the track and do any 440 repeats yet, and all of a sudden I'm, my body's showing the change. And so, I was able to go, oh, that's interesting. I think this is kind of an inside job. But when I was in my medical training, because of, just being more grounded in my own body through sports, they would be, kind of coming at it from a whole different philosophical perspective and belief system. And my whole thoughts was, this is stupid, because if you just do this, this, and this, you don't even need any of that crap. In fact, accidents even become less, occurring. But I took it all with a grain of salt, because I wanted to learn that system and I wanted to interface in it, and got all my licenses and all that stuff. And then shortly after, realized I didn't even need any stinking licenses.
Are you practicing unlicensed now?
I'm pausing because I need to define license, which is a bureaucratic arm of a de facto government giving you permission to do something that would normally be unpermissible or even illegal. So we have to understand what a license means. And the practice of medicine, as it's thought as today, is really criminal, because it's keeping people from the truth of who they are and their ability to self-heal, which is the only way you can heal anyway. There's no doctor that can heal another person. And at the same time, you're doing things that actually disavow the very first premise of the Hippocratic Oath, which is doctor, do no harm. And you're doing a lot of harm. So, am I practicing? I'm no longer in practice. I closed down my clinic. We had a very international clinic in the islands. I did that for about 40 some odd years, got good experience. And, we were very well known through certain circles, but we were never in a commercial zone where I hung a shingle. We had live-in units where, we were always booked at least 2 years in advance. People would come from all over the world and check themselves in, and we were dealing with stuff that's supposedly incurable, but people very often had favorable outcomes, not because I was curing anything, but because we understood that the body is a natural ecology. There's no such things as a germ etiology of disease, nor is there even a concept of disease within the natural order. Those are all just signs that our ecological house is out of order. And in bioterrain medicine, you know how to work with that and put things back into, you know, proper balance so that the body can do what it does, which is to operate free from malady, or even in the best of most favorable circumstances, retard the aging process, because aging is another myth as well. Even though I'm looking at myself with gray hair, I know how I got every single one of them.
I have a similar perspective through my languaging work, where I see the mortality codes in certain words and phrases, and just like a generalized relationship to the fiction of linear time, and how when we speak those fictions, it activates these aging processes that don't necessarily have to be there. That's kind of my take on it. And at the same time, you know, like understanding, okay, this is a process, because you know what you know, I know what I know, we're still living in a collective reality construct that's been programmed a different way. And so the way I see it is like, yes, I know what I know, and there's still, you know, however many decades of programming that already got in, and living in this collective soup, it seems like it might be a generation or two before they put down the whole aging fiction. That's kind of my perspective on it. Does that line up with yours?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I would also say, you know, if you've ever been underwater watching a school of fish, you'll see that the school just kind of continues on in the same trajectory. But then you see a couple just kind of stray off here and there and there and there. And then before you know it, there's more kind of going in different directions. And then all of a sudden, the whole school shifts. So I think people like yourself that are out here exchanging these kinds of ideas are those little stray fish that someday the school will, you know, take off in a different direction because you have dared to do so yourself. And yes, I think that's what our job is.
And is that what you see happen around terrain theory, as far as you being so ahead of the game, and now you're seeing more and more people start to clue into that whole program?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I have an ambivalent relationship with medicine, even the type I practice all these years, because I don't believe in doctors. Mm-hmm. At the first visit of everybody that I ever treated, we'll say, you know, I gave the same spiel, which is, hey, you don't need me. There's nothing I can do for you. You know, your body is what will heal you. But then I explained, so, you know, I didn't totally discourage him. I explained that my job is to create a space, widen that window of opportunity so that your physiology can hang in there long enough for you to change your mind. And so we had very advanced ways, still do, of, you know, supporting that natural terrain so that a growth or some degenerative process couldn't completely overwhelm an individual. We keep it at bay, and then, you know, do other things on other levels of the etheric mechanisms that would change the programming, so that programming wouldn't keep reappearing within the physical matrix. And it, you know, depending on the individual, it would dictate how much time that person needed in order to do that.
And would that be possible if the person was still buying into the idea that they were sick, that there's something wrong with them? Like, how necessary is it for whomever you're working with to be on board with your paradigm and to take 100% responsibility for their health?
The way I worked, they didn't have to be on board with anything, because if they were maybe less amenable to the ideas that you and I are speaking on, what I learned is that my job was not to convince anybody. It was not at all to try to bring somebody into my belief system. Mm-hmm. Because how do any of us know what another person needs to experience? If a person needs to experience chemo, great. Then what I'm going to do is meet them at their belief system. And then I'm going to do things that are going to make their journey less unpleasant compared to if they were just doing chemo, and maybe give them an opportunity to outgrow a perceived need for chemo. And what would happen is a lot of people would make that shift eventually because we weren't trying to force them into something they weren't ready for. And then individuals that were choosing to move on, you know, and make the journey, then we helped them do it in a way where they were at home with loved ones, they weren't in pain on morphine drips, they had a conscious awareness while they made the transition. And, you know, so we helped them achieve their mission, whatever that was. We did attract a good number of people that were ready for a major paradigm shift. And a lot of those people that came into us already got sliced, diced, and poisoned by the system and realized, wow, not only is this horrific, but I'm getting worse. And, you know, not only that, but their own medical doctors that were overseeing their case are now saying, hey, go get your affairs in order because there's nothing more I can do. And so we had a lot of clients that would come in pretty sorry condition, but they were ready to make the change. And, you know, it required a little bit extra cleanup work and things on our part in order to, you know, get them in a better flow. But we were able to do that.
What do you think are some of the biggest myths propping up the current standard issue medical paradigm?
Well, the biggest myths have to do with our very nature, our innate abilities, our potentials, and who we really are. What I had to do, what I chose to do in my work was to not only leave no stone unturned as far as all the different modalities and, you know, schools of medical thought out there, but I had to delve pretty heavily into old writings from like the 1600s, you know, and understand what the old alchemists were talking about, because the alchemical sciences, and I understand that conjures up different meanings to people, different imagery, because of the way it's been falsely programmed. Just like, you know, if you don't like what somebody's saying, you call them a conspiracy theorist. Well, alchemist is like this dude in a long funny hat, you know, with Eye of Newton, you know, and making these and doing potions and incantations and things. But in reality, it was a complete science with the best of what modern science says constitutes science, which is empirical experience, but then also an understanding of not just that quantitative observational half of the coin, but the other half, which is qualitative. And the qualitative is different in that you're going into the whole world of resonance, which is what makes us tick, which makes our consciousness able, when we harness it and understand it, able to create the resonance to create what we want in our biology, in our world, in our circumstances, in our business, and so forth. So resonance is only perceived through our real thinking organ, which is the heart. And this isn't a new agey concept. It's really an organ that can receive that resonance. That was what we would maybe loosely call a, you know, many dimensions of reality. But on the other side, that conventional science has exclusively limited themselves to, it's about electromagnetics. Electromagnetics are what all our technologies are based on. And what it's doing, it's creating a moment by moment toroidal field projection of the next frame of the movie. And then our consciousness has been very carefully programmed to interpret what those frames of the movie mean as we watch them roll out in a linear progression. Now, there's a time and place for that, and there's a real science behind that, and it would really explain, if we want to get into things like waveform mechanics, how our consciousness forms our reality. But in order to have unlimited possibility outside of those same train tracks that we think are the only possibility, we have to go into the science of resonance. We just called it a 100% vibrational science. And now all of a sudden, not only are you no longer limited in any way possible, and in my practice of medicine, that came in very handy, because even within protocols of what we consider bioterrain medicine or any kind of alternative technique, I was never limited. And my motto is always, anything can cause anything. So you have to have a way of just bringing in things that you wouldn't normally even think were related. So, you know, that's where, as individuals, I believe our journey in this plane is to reunite the head and the heart, which is the mental plane and the astral plane. It's not just the physical organs. And when you have both sides operating as a unit, because they were never intended to be separate in the first place, and separation is just a perception anyway, now all of a sudden you have everything available to you to do whatever you wish, as long as it doesn't interfere with other life forms. So yeah, the alchemical sciences allow you to understand the mechanics of the etheric mechanism. And then you can, let's just say in the practice of medicine, you can actually test and evaluate on those other planes before your body precipitates into physical biology, as we think of it. You can also examine subplanes within each of those planes, and you can surgically isolate those and track them neurologically to find out what the impediment on that plane is that is holding this whole show up in the first place.
How do you do that? Are there tools? Is it something you're doing in like a meditative state through your mind's eye? In terms of like surgically measuring which subplane is holding the distortion?
So to answer that, I'd have to address several levels and different disciplines.
Okay.
Very early in my career, when I first jumped into naturopathic college, I got to be good friends with a guy by the name of George Goodhart.
Okay.
George Goodhart was the founder and innovator of applied kinesiology. And there, I was in that first tier of people. And not only did we pioneer the muscle testing and stuff like that, but then we took it into clinical kinesiology. But here's the deal, it was a neurological construct.
Okay.
So in order to do muscle testing, you would have to understand medical neurology and understand how to do things so that you're eliciting responses consistently from, you know, like gamma one instead of gamma two fibers, and, you know, and all this kind of stuff you think about in neurology. Otherwise, your results are going to be spurious. But from that, we were able to understand not only how to track issues, but to prioritize and then use those neurological networks, of which muscles are a display screen for each of those individual conduits. And then you could trace them and also get to not just a priority, but what was needing to be done in order to address that. And just like opening up a computer file, you know how to access through data retrieval. And then once you're in and you know you're in, then you can make changes. But then built in, even better than a Word document, is, you know, the body itself through the neurology gave you exact feedback as far as how to go about it and in what sequence, because sequence is very important. That's just one modality. And I bring that up first because a lot of people are doing muscle testing these days, which is a complete bastardization of the original neurological science that it was. The other areas that I barred greatly from were radiesthesia. For instance, biogeometry, which I know you're probably aware of, is more of a recent evolution of radiesthesia. Radiesthesia uses technologies that can go directly into the etheric mechanism and access in that vibrational realm with great specificity what's going on, what needs to be done about it, and exactly where. So putting all these tools together, it would allow me to do that. There are more, but I'll just mention one last one. I did in-house labs on everybody every single visit. So if you're staying in our place, our clinic in Hawaii, and you're there for a month and I'm seeing you maybe 3-4 days a week, I'm gonna do labs on you every time I see you before you actually come into the treatment room. Now, those labs would be assays of chemistry that we would extrapolate from your bodily fluids. Unlike labs that are done in conventional medicine that have kind of standardized parameters as far as within normal limits, which is really stupid. There's no such thing as normal. It was a whole different, not just understanding, but a way to extrapolate the specimens in the first place. Now, once we got certain key specimens from the fluids, then there's a mathematical interpretation of those. Now, that mathematical interpretation would tell me the ratios of certain things relative to one another. And depending on the proportions, like let's just take something somebody talks about, people talk about all the time, which is pH. Everyone's saying, oh, you got to be alkaline, or you got, you know, whatever. Okay. So pH is nothing more than electrical resistance, which is the velocity of electrical flow.
Okay.
And the more resistance there is, which means more anionic or more alkaline, that's like taking a garden hose and, you know, tightening the nozzle so it's a real streamlined, and you're going to have more velocity and it's going to go further and be, you know, just be more intense. Meanwhile, if you're more cationic or, you know, acidic, then you open it up and water just kind of spills out, and that's going to slow your velocity and so forth. So that's just, you know, one of the many things we look at. But rather than saying, okay, your pH should be 7 point whatever, or, you know, it's meaningless unless you also understand the conductivity, the, you know, a lot of other variables that are going to dictate whether that particular velocity or pH is right for you. And so anyway, it would be a really good snapshot to show the electrical micronage of your ground matrix, you know, your connective tissues, and how easy electricity flows versus having impediments, because it's all about the flow of electricity. Our bodies are superconductors. There's not supposed to be any resistance nor loss of information in a process. And then that way, everything is instantly appraised of everything else and fixes itself on the instant. We've kind of lost that tendency or that innate ability for a number of reasons. But the lab testing that I would do would tell me exactly not only where impediments were or if, you know, the energy was flowing freely, but it would tell me what to do about it. The other thing it would tell me, stop me if I'm going on too much in any area. But the other thing it would tell me, I could construct from the results a toroidal field and understand that there might be a distortion in the northwest quadrant versus, you know, one of the other quadrants based on the energy aberrations. And that would tell me exactly what the nature of the issue that a person would be faced with. You know, say 10 people come in with a growth in the same part of their body or something. Well, depending on the results, all 10 people would have different reasons as far as how they got there. So this testing would tell me, based on the distortions in the toroidal field, the actual energy field of a person, which is easy to measure, through these techniques, exactly what the source of their issues were, and therefore what to do about it. And the cool thing about it is it would also replicate exactly what I found in the radiesthesia testing, exactly what I found on the neurological kinesiological examination. And also, if you are good at Asian medicine and osteopathy, then you could use your hands to literally discern through the pulses of the body, through the abdominal tensions and things, where issues were, and that would always coincide. So I never like to use a tool or even two or three tools. What I really like to do is get all these different perspectives, just like you're interested in buying a house, but the agent isn't there to let you in the front door. So you walk around, you look through all the windows, and that's what good medicine should be like. You need to look through all the windows of a person's being, including their etheric components, in order to really understand what makes things tick.
I appreciate you walking us through that, and I'm guessing that you're using more diagnostics and more tools, than the ones you just mentioned. But
Yeah.
you're referencing having gone back to ancient medicine books from the 1500s, and part of what I'm generally doing is tracking, like, when did things go awry? Did they come to us, kind of unformed and unfinished, and honest mistakes were made along the way? Or, were things co-opted? And so we had all these great disciplines and modalities back then. And I also know, I'm guessing it's around the time that, like, the Gnostics kind of shoved their scientific materialism, the whole scientism. I know, Francis Bacon had a hand in that. And so does that line up with your research as far as, like, why we had all these beautiful modalities that were working wonders that all of a sudden most people have never heard of and certainly aren't being put into practice in a large scale?
Well, that would depend on what level of the hierarchy you're looking at. If you're looking at the useful idiots like us doctors, now you're looking at people kind of making honest mistakes for the most part, and just repeating the lies that they've been programmed with and genuinely believing it, and also with a genuine intention to help people. I believe most doctors are like that.
Well, let me ask about that, because if most doctors have the genuine intention to help people, how do you think they're squaring the fact that the way that they're engaging medicine is breaking the Hippocratic Oath on the regular?
I personally wouldn't be able to rationalize that if I was doing that. However, having mingled with those types for many years, their response to your question is, well, it's still the best thing going. Yeah, we don't have all the answers yet, and maybe it's not perfect, but there's nothing else out there that's been scientifically proven, because I went to medical school, and if it existed, I would know about it. And everybody knows that, chiropractors, naturopaths, and acupuncturists are all quacks anyway. So, we're doing the best we can. That would
Okay.
be their response. Now,
Got
if you
it.
go to the other level of the hierarchy, there is an element amidst us that truly wants to interfere with our free will decisions and abilities to come and go from this construct as was originally intended, and to use it as a not a school of hard knocks, but just to understand through our experience how to manage energy in order to master the creative our creative abilities, so that we could be taken out of quarantine and create system of worlds and much grander scale, for which this is, I believe, a training ground for. So now those individuals, who the hell are they? You know as well as I do all the different theories, everything from reptilians to, you know, so forth. But one thing I can, and I think most people are able to trace, is it emanates back at least to a certain point of time to the Royal Society of Europe. Now, the Royal Society, of course, they're an interesting group of characters because they also, when you look into their lineages, they have some kind of interesting roots, a lot of them.
How
but,
so?
Well, like different kind of genetic predispositions and different physical characteristics. And now a lot of that you could attribute to inbreeding and so forth. But, you know, there's very different things, you know, different elements that are more in abundance in their blood that, you know, gave a rise to the old saying blue bloods, you know, that would actually give their, you know, their coloration of fluids as well as their skin tone different, you know, color. So there's kind of a little bit of a different interplay from somewhere. I don't know where it started, but these people within the Royal Society, one thing we're able to piece together for sure is they really believe it's their prerogative to manage the herds on planet Earth. And on a personal note, in my practice, and I'll just leave it vague, but I had a very substantial number of so-called elites that were my patients. Some of them are very recognizable people, you know their names, and then others were folks that were even more powerful, but you never know who they are.
Right.
And they seek out people that they believe are maybe have something of value for them, and they respect you for that. And at that point, when you build relationships up, which I did with a number of individuals, they are very, I mean, they don't seem evil or anything of the sort, but they very matter-of-factly will tell you that, well, you know, the common individual out there is an animal.
They say this.
And why would you? Oh, absolutely. And well, why do you care about them? You know, that kind of comment.
Whoa.
And again, it's like you or I saying, okay, I've got termites in the house and I'm going to tent the house and kill them all. And you're not going to lose much sleep over it, probably. Same thing.
That has me thinking that they can't be human, because why would humans be so cavalier about the lives of those who are sharing the same species? You know, when I look at what's going on, people talk about genocide in Israel, and it's like, okay, whatever, we're having our own genocide here, and it's still continuing. And why would anyone kill their own people unless they weren't part of that species that they were trying to kill off?
I have my own theories on that. But just to finish with these individuals, not only would they be very, I used to have barbecues and stuff with these folks, you know, and they're friends. And we'd have discussions, and I'd call them out on shit, and they just, you know, very sophisticated, educated people. And also they spend ample time not just going to stupid state colleges learning crap, but they're studying a lot of the stuff that I studied, you know, they're aware, and they have time and means in order to delve into things that they feel are important to them. And a lot of it has to do with their spiritual evolution. But here's the rub. They would also, by the way, open doors that could be very enticing monetarily and otherwise. If they feel that you're a little bit different than the rest of the pack and that they respect you and you're even useful to them when they need your services, you know, so that's out there as well. I believe we're talking about the two polarities, electromagnetic and vibrational. two sides of the same coin. When you, and you can witness this in average people these days, mm-hmm. when people's minds are brought into a 100% secular predisposition focused on mechanics with no clue as far as the energy that precipitates those mechanics and that physicality in the first place. Mm-hmm. Now your consciousness at a point gets over on that other side of the ledger column where it's 51% over there. Mm-hmm. You're going to lose your tether with spirit. And even if somebody comes along and says, hey, did you ever consider this? It's going to go, whoosh. There's going to be no way for that person to be able to relate to that at all.
Okay.
So now consider that you have lineages of folks that no longer have the creative, innate creative abilities that we're all born with, but because of their incarnations into these same lineages, mm-hmm. are now used to using the herds for their own use, including killing numbers of them whenever you think, you know, they're getting too large. And now at the same time, you use their energy, their creativity to invent things and, you know, all the things that make our present societies function. And you've, again, literally lost the ability to create yourself. And of a lot of these people that I'm alluding to are definitely in that camp. They require, like, people like myself to figure out, you know, maybe how to put some things right in their body, or maybe to create a technology that they need in order to control people in the monetary system. Mm-hmm. So they have all these folks out there that do their creative work. And these people, because they never developed that capacity themselves, use other people, including literally using their life force as batteries to keep their own world running. They're lost. And even if they wanted a lot of them to kind of, you know, get back into balance and be a whole individual again, they can't, they're gone. And in that, just like a person that maybe chooses chemo exclusively, when you choose that path exclusively, then you are setting yourself up for having to make the journey once again and maybe figure it out next time around. Or if you are an individual that cannot be enlightened because you're so resistant to it, then you experience the second death, which just means your opportunity for an individualized co-creator is gone. You're not burning in hell or anything else. You lost the opportunity.
That's interesting. So it sounds like that's different than like choosing some sort of something that, say, Western medicine would pathologize as a disease, but that at any moment waking up to it, making a different choice. But it sounds like that choice isn't necessarily available to these people who've separated from their souls, per se. A, I'm wondering if that's correct, but B, when you're talking about, you know, you're tracking people's toroidal field in these different layers of the etheric body, are they presenting as human beings?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And even in individuals like that, you could restore a balance that would allow things to start functioning and they get over their problems. And I'll add this. When that happened, you would see people of all types have awakenings on other level. And I did experience that.
Oh.
So I don't think it's ever too late, but I do believe you can take things to such an extreme that it's going to be a difficult road, you know, traversing back into being a whole being again.
Right. Yeah. I'm curious about terrain theory, germ theory, and I've also been hearing more and more that DNA has also been never been isolated or proven to exist in any physical way. But let's bookmark the DNA piece, because I've interviewed Andrew Kaufman a couple times. I've had the germ theory conversation, and I understand terrain theory. We want to keep, well, cancel, clear, delete. I'm sure I don't understand terrain theory. But as I'm translating it in my mind, the body's a self-correcting mechanism, and when the internal terrain is healthy, it can keep us in balance. That's been my perspective throughout maintaining my own health. Keep an alkaline physiology. Of course, I wasn't attuned to the ratios that you mentioned earlier in the conversation. Don't eat sugar. Don't eat the things that do a body bad. But then I noticed when they put out the bioweapon, some people call it FOVID, whatever, I got it a few times. I remember going to a party and then I was sick afterwards. And in my mind, I'm looking at like, what's the psycho-emotional reason? Or was I zapped from the self-checkout machine? And I talked to my girlfriend and she said, well, everyone at the party got sick. And I was like, but I don't believe in germ theory. So I don't see how that would be possible. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I understand how a lot of people in the conversation around germ theory, terrain theory can discount things as not true, but I'm not seeing reasons being put forth for why things manifest that have as yet landed in my brain. Did that make sense?
Sure. No, totally legit. To understand that, we'd have to say, okay, why are we limiting ourselves to one etiology or one cause of disease, which we think of as germs?
Okay.
Maybe there's other things out there. Let's consider... let's go back to the Spanish flu epidemic, which I'm sure you've investigated into that. There's all sorts of experimentation, and I'm sure Andy and other doctors that you've interviewed have told you the same thing. They couldn't get a contagion. They couldn't isolate a contagion that then they could expose another animal or person to and make them sick. It just didn't work.
Okay.
So it's like, okay, what's causing this? Okay, so now you go into Rudolf Steiner, who just happened to be around in those days. And he said, well, it's because of this new electrical grid that was just established in Europe.
Right.
And that is creating a need for the herds to accommodate. And if you consider that we are literally an electronic beings, in our own little cocoons that give us a sense of individualization and the ability to create within our own little cocoon without bringing in other, elements that we don't want to encroach. And also within that, we are constantly interacting with our external environment, which is a larger realm that we are replications of. And just like a fish in water, we require a constant interface and interplay with the larger realm that's providing the resonance and the capacitance to store that resonance that then our, microcosm, our bodies, our beings can then pick up off that and replicate the same kind of functions to make our biology work. So what I'm trying to make a point with is it's all about energy exchange. You know, people are familiar with acupuncture. Well, what's acupuncture? It's about creating a homeostasis between our internal and external environments. That's what the meridians are. There are internal meridians to every tissue and organ in our body that are more internal as opposed to our larger meridians that you see on a typical acupuncture chart, which is for the interface of environment. One of the ways I prove out some of these things to myself is, like I said, I had people flying in from all over the place for our services. A lot of them would come jet lagged and everything. I'd take them in, and I had a very easy way to coincide their internal time clock with the outer time clock of the new time zone, the new, you know, realm that they weren't used to. And, you know, instantly they're synced up, no more jet lag. So
how
that's just one
that?
Of many. So there are points on the body we call alarm points or now points.
Okay.
And what they are is they are like the main circuit breakers, we'll say, for a particular meridian. Okay. So you can take any meridian and you can take the now point or the alarm point. Mm-hmm. And with different types of testing, I could do kinesiology, which was one, and have them therapy localized, which just means create a polarity contact with that. Mm-hmm. And then I could do test that, you know, would require me to bring in other parts of the neurology, and it would instantly tell me if they were in some other time zone or, and by the way, the alarm point that I would use would be the alarm point that was in present time, the most prominent meridian. So just like in the sky, you know, the sun at 12 noon is right straight up.
Yep.
Well, that's the heart meridian, you know, same thing. So our meridian system mirrors the movement of, you know, the constellations and everything around our realm, the time clock or the sky clock, we'll call it. So then, you know, depending, and usually they'd be out of sync, then you could take that point and other points, treat them both at the same time, bring them into sync so that there is no longer this phase contrast where they weren't working together yet.
Mm-hmm.
And you just bring them together and boom, you're there. You're in present time in a new location. Those are the little like clinical skills that help you understand, oh, that's what the meridian system is doing, for instance. So get me back on track. What was our original question?
Well, my original question was asking, like, what makes us sync? And I'm understanding from what you're saying, it's the, the interdependence with our environment. But I'm just curious about what you just said regarding, like, the sun being, does that work in terms of, like, a flat Earth simulation theory because of the shared agreement of what these things are? Or is that presupposing that we're living in an organic thing, space is real, stars are real, in terms of that methodology you just mentioned?
Well, there are real plasma fields in the sky clock that are projecting very real resonances. We can test them in any number of ways, and I do that in my business. And when those resonant plasma fields are in a particular position where they are more intense in our atmosphere or within our area of the realm, you know, then that's what you're syncing up with.
Okay.
So no different than noticing that the sky, the sun's setting over there at, you know, 6 o'clock at night. It's a different phenomenal, whole different vibrational experience than when it's directly overhead.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are a replica of that. And it really doesn't matter. I have my own beliefs about how this realm construct is. I don't believe we're a spinning ball for a second. On the other hand, whatever model floats your boat, you can use that in the same way clinically that I'm suggesting.
Okay.
Because you're, yeah. So it doesn't even really matter.
Cool.
So the reason why I brought up how health is an interplay between our energy field, just like you take a fish out of water, it's not going to work well.
That does it for the first half of my conversation with Dr. Bear Lando. As you are inspired to pick up the second half of our conversation, which gets even more juicy, you can find that over on both my Patreon and Locals communities. Those addresses are dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/DannyKatz. On both of those communities, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, post-show throwdowns, oodles of bonus content, plus the knowledge that you are supporting one of your very favorite content creators. While we're on the topic of all things healing and medicine, I'm also reminding you that I have an amazing webinar called The Language of Healing available on my site, DannyKatz.com. It features really helpful tools and precepts for the language we're using to describe our healing initiations to ensure that we are consistently programming our subconscious mind for health, healing, optimal well-being. As I said, you can find that over at DannyKatz.com. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Patreon and the locals. Have a rockin' day.